This is Phil Farron.
And I am driving home. It is chilly. Goodness. We've had one of those delightful times, as we are wont to do in the Ozarks, of going from beautiful weather yesterday. I'm getting my gloves because my steering wheel is cold. Beautiful weather yesterday. I think it was like in the 60s yesterday. And like this morning, I think it was, I don't know, in the 40s, 30s, high 30s. Right now it's 22 and it's in the middle of the afternoon. So we have gone from lovely weather yesterday through the night. It kept dropping. Oh yeah, my windshield wipers aren't gonna work. Kept dropping through the night. And we're down to 22. It's going to keep dropping and it'll be like 12 tomorrow morning. So yeah, it'll be very exciting. It'll just be very exciting. But I got out to the car and I got my recorder and got it set up and I had it sitting on my lap and I was like, wow, that thing's cold. Anyways, all is well. All is well. Yeah. So hopefully we'll get some heat in the car here pretty soon. There's a couple of the guys that have like the little magic buttons on their cars that when they get ready to go, they hit the button and their car starts up. And then it gets warmed up and then they come out. That's not me. I got this old preacher car that doesn't have one of those features on it. It's okay. We'll get warmed up. Goodness. Goodness. All is well. All is well. Costumes are going fine. I'm not getting as much accomplished on the costumes as quickly as I had hoped, but it's all been good stuff, which means that, you know what, it's not a matter of procrastinating. I'm working along. It'll all work out. Still working on wings. Still working on feathers right now for the wings. There's big feathers that you make with cloth and with construction adhesive, and I'm working my way through those. They're numbered, and there's each number represents two feathers because there's one on either side. So there's 23 numbers altogether. So there's 46 feathers altogether, and they're about 4 inches wide and anywhere from a foot to two and a half feet long. So I'm working on. I started at 23 and I'm down into, I think I'm at 10 or 9 or somewhere in there. So going down to zero. So I'm getting closer. I've got the fabric cut out for the next set of four. I have the four or three. I have the wires all bent around to where they're moderately straight, and et cetera. You put a wire down the center of it and that gives it a little firmness. So I've got that. So now it's a matter of just gluing them together and then getting started on the next set. So I would hope in 2 or 3 days here that I would have that. And then I'm going to have to swing off real quick and finish some things up for April 1st. Whoa. Get that finished up for April 1st. Had a couple more pieces fall in play for April 1st. So April Fools. So this should be fun. And I had a little help, because I think I had mentioned before that the trick here is really how do you, as a person who dresses up every week, who has a fairly distinctive body shape and look, how in the world do you dress up such that you can go into Walmart at your normal time and not be recognized? And the answer to that, well, I mean, I could go incognito, put on a mask, put on a hat, you know, put on a big coat and just slink around the store and nobody would notice me, but that's cheating. That's not, I could just go into incognito mode. But how do you How do you dress in an outfit that people will see and will think is funny once they realize it's you and yet not recognize you? And I think the answer to that is you really can't if you go into the store once. You have to go in more than one time. As it turns out, I am going to have a little bit of assistance in all of this because I've been asked to come in my sunflower costume because they're opening up the gardening center on April the 1st. So I told them I could do that. So that puts me in the store twice. So the first time in is just sacrificial. You know, you just let it go and laugh, ha 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 ha, and then you're done. Second time is not really for April Fools. You're just coming in to help out the store a little bit. So then when you go in the third time, by that time, you've got to clean people's palates out a little bit. You got a chance. So we'll see. We'll see. I think it's funny. I think it's funny. But we'll see. I wonder if I... Oh, almost. Oh, hey. There, whoa. Yeah. So my windshield wipers just broke loose. Anyway, so costumes are fine. That's all going fine. You know, it's just, it's amazing because all of this is step at a time, one step at a time. And the same thing is happening with book 16, which is the final book in the second series of 8. I'm wrapping up. I'm on chapter 30. I thought I was on chapter 30 last week, and then I actually looked at the chapters and I had misnumbered. So I am on chapter 30 now. And it's just lovely how you plant little seeds earlier in the book and you just don't even realize that they're going to come around. And so, you know, maybe I could have just tied things together no matter what I had written, but there's just some lovely little tie-ons that are happening. And now I just have to work out kind of the final stuff of the epilogue. I do have a news chapter where you can just spit out a lot of information with those news chapters, and so that's useful. So I'll be spitting out a lot of information with that. And then once I get that done, we'll get into the epilogue, and then I'll start my read-through, and I think I've got the costumes for the kids. It's going to be interesting to see my daughter can actually get Asher, my grandson, to wear the mask that I have for him to wear. He's kind of a shy guy, doesn't want to stand out in a crowd, and the mask kind of makes him stand out in a crowd. And I showed him a picture of him, and he's like, So we'll see. We'll see. If not, I can always just kind of fake it. Oh, and so, you know, it should be good. It should be good. I need to respond to a text message here real quick. Thanks. Looking forward to working with you as well. Sorry. This is part of the whole April Fool's thing. So, anyways, had a lovely conversation with a professional who's going to be assisting me. So, we'll see how this goes. Anyway, so costumes are good, writing is good, work is good. Didn't quite get as far as I was hoping to get today with the work this week. But we're fine. It'll all be fine. It was one of those things that I had spent the day getting ready for a deployment, and I thought I was ready to go, and then there was a whole subsystem that hadn't been put in to that particular application that I thought had been put in. I hadn't had control of the application for a while because another programmer was working at it, and I just assumed that he had put an error handling system in there, and then I looked, and it wasn't there. Thankfully, it's a really easy error handling system to put in. We use Raygun. And so I was working with another guy, and we got that put in, and so that's all put in, but that was late enough in the day I didn't want to go ahead and deploy because I'm not going to be there tomorrow. So I thought, well, we just hold. We'll do it Monday morning, and it should be fine. Anyway, so that all seems to be going fine. In the meantime, I was able to get caught up on a few other little tasks, and I think that's all fine. So thankfully, things are all moving forward, and we actually had some nice compliment for some other things that we deployed earlier this week. So that's good. That's good. It's always nice when you can, you know, make your user community happy. And so all is well there. Last week I had talked about cyber weapons and cyber spying and all that sort of thing. And I don't actually have notes with me. And honestly, I was like, what am I going to talk about today? But then I realized, wait a minute, you watched an episode of Joe Rogan. Which, of course, that disqualifies me in some people's eyes for being a person of reason. But that's okay. Everybody's got a right to their own opinions. But I can't remember what this guy's name was. And if you want to look it up on Spotify, you can, you know, Spotify is such that you can download it for free. And you can listen to Joe Rogan's stuff on Spotify for free. The name of the man that I was listening to, it's episode 1768. It's really fascinating. His name is Dr. Robert Epstein. And he is one of the only people that is doing this. And it's really fascinating because he's actually commenting on and researching what Google does and researching what things like Facebook and Instagram and all those things that as to how they track you, violate your privacy, all that sort of thing. I mean, he's not really hip on Android phones because they're just a collection machine, according to him. I mean, they're just collecting everything on you. And he says, in that respect, Apple is better. He said, but Apple does collect a bunch of stuff. But he started talking about, specifically, about Google. And it was fascinating. It was really, really fascinating. And he has not only tracked what is being tracked these years, but he has been made aware of the techniques and tools that Google uses to influence your decisions and build profiles on you. And when I say influence your decisions, it's not just that Google is building a profile on you so that they can try to get you to respond to certain ads they're showing you, but it actually ends up being much broader than that. That in fact, the people who work at Google have a certain political mindset, and they feel like it's their mission to convert you to their political mindset. And, you know, we would think that this seems a bit out of the purview for a technological company. But the difficulty here gets back to that idea of that we as human beings, we have angels and demons within us, however you want to say it, light side, dark side, flesh and spirit, whatever context you want to put that in. Everyone acknowledges that human beings are capable both of the most amazing accomplishments and the most innovative and wonderful things, as well as authors of the worst atrocities, and often those things coexist within the same person. And in order to build systems in the world that will function in fair ways, that will function in ways that do not overreach their boundaries, you really have to construct systems that take into account that we as human beings have these competing forces within us. And if you don't take that into account, what's going to happen is the same thing that happens in every belief system. This is not restricted just to religion, but it happens in every belief system, that those in power abuse their power, that those who are part of the in-group despise those who are not part of the in-group, that those who believe they have the secret knowledge simplify everything down, and they categorize people as us versus them, and then mock them with derision and treat them unkindly. Hello, hello, hello. I just felt the car slip underneath me a little bit. So apparently, we are getting cool enough that some of the water has frozen and we're getting into a black ice situation. So I'm going to slow down here a little bit, because the car definitely just moved a little bit sideways on me. And you see these progressions no matter where you're looking. Whenever there is a certain group of people who enjoy a certain level of power, who have adopted certain beliefs, what you will eventually see is you will see them exploiting that power and those beliefs to lord it over others, to become Pharisees who point out the faults of others to make themselves feel more righteous. All of these progressions happen everywhere, to the point that one philosopher slash scientist said, as I have often quoted in the last few months, that truth goes through three stages. The first is ridicule. The second is violent opposition. And the third is acceptance as if it was self-evident. And you see that progression all through. So it should come as no surprise that when you have a power structure like Google, and it is extremely powerful right now, that those who work at Google will come to believe that their power should be expended in ways that will benefit the us's versus the them's. And in fact, Google has slid right into that, because that's human nature. And if you don't recognize that's human nature, and if you don't build in as best you can safeguards against that, that will simply happen. Inevitably. So what you would expect out of Google is that they would use their vast power to give you the most relevant search results that they could. And yet, according to Robert Epstein, I think it was, I mentioned him before, according to him, Google, in an internal document, discussed ephemeral, what do they call it, ephemeral something, ephemeral nudges or ephemeral something. And what they meant by that was that ability to influence people without them even noticing and without there even being a record of it anywhere. But they really liked that. So as you can imagine, if someone is searching for something, how you present data back to them will influence that person. So one of the things that was an example that had been given to me years ago, and it's fine. It's fine. It's just, this is what Google does. So, for instance, I don't know if it's still this way, but I checked it out years ago, and sure enough. So, if you go to Google and you type in white couple, and then you look at the images, at that time, the second or third or fourth image would be of an interracial couple. Whereas if you typed in black couple, you wouldn't get an interracial couple. And so there's an influence that is being brought to bear against that, that, well, someone who is searching for white couples obviously has the wrong attitude, and so we're going to return a search result to them that will help maybe nudge them in a certain direction to say that, you know, a white couple isn't necessarily the ideal, but an interracial couple, or, you know, other people of color, that's, you should, you know, see that as well, which is fine. But this kind of social engineering, if Google was just giving you search results that were relevant to the words you were actually typing in, I'm slipping around here a little bit, and I'm also sneezing. Excuse me. Then perhaps you wouldn't get those search results, but because Google is not only trying to give you search results, but they're also trying to influence you into the way of right thinking, according to them, then of course these things happen. Well, Robert Epstein has been studying, I think it's Robert Epstein, I need to look it up again. He has been studying these things and running his own experiments and to determine just, yes, Robert Epstein, just how much ability Google or other search engines would have to affect people. And it's really quite fascinating. So one of the things that someone suggested to him when it was part of the 2016 election cycle is someone had suggested to him that he should go out and take a look at search suggestions. So this is not search results, but this is as you are typing your search terms into the Google engines, of course, it's making suggestions. Did you mean this? Did you mean that? Did you mean this? And someone had suggested to him that he should go out and type in Hillary Clinton versus typing in Donald Trump. And what the person indicated was, is that if you go in during the 2016 election and type in Hillary Clinton, none of the search suggestions would be negative in any way. They would all be positive. But if you typed in Donald Trump, of course, you would get a lot of negative search results. So that led Robert Epstein to wonder how much that could actually influence people. And so he built an experiment, as they are wont to do, building experiments. And what they did was they got 100 voters, undecided voters, and they brought them in, and they had them, I'm getting my mail, one moment, and they had them just do searches. They pulled them beforehand and found that they had groups that was about 50-50, they were undecided voters, and they just had them do searches for this, that, and the other, and they controlled what the search suggestions were. They didn't force a person to look at any given page. They just controlled what the search suggestions were. And they found within, I don't know, a couple of hours or an hour, I forget what it was. They found that within that time, they were able to take people from a 50-50 split to a 90-10 split in the direction that they wanted, simply by the search suggestions. And they said no one knew what they had done. Not one of the people in the room recognized that they had been swayed simply by seeing a set of search suggestions that came and went, and there was no record of it. So, with that then, what they had done, and Robert Epstein, one of the things that he has organized and gotten accomplished is that he has, the dog is barking, he has organized people who have agreed to be his quote-unquote Nielsen families. So he has people who have agreed that they will allow to have software on their computers that will monitor everything that's coming from these big tech companies. So anytime they pull up Google and do a search, it will monitor what the search results are coming back, but it also monitors what the search suggestions are. I think it even monitors cookies and all that sort of thing to see what these big tech companies are actually doing. It's a brilliant idea. And he had it going somewhat in 2016. He had it going more in 2018. And by 2020, he was all across the nation and he was monitoring huge number of computers to document what was happening with Google and with, you know, other of the social media stuff. And he claims that they have absolutely documented that Google, in all of their searches, in all of their search suggestions, had a clear bias and were clearly trying to push people in a given direction, which, of course, was Democratic, since they're based in California. Okay. So what was really interesting about all that is that they had made a presentation to Congress. He had made a presentation about what was happening in the 2020 election. And I think it was maybe after the actual election, but it was before the runoff for the Georgia senators that were so close, that the runoff for that. But he had made this presentation to Congress about the fact that Google was definitely attempting to swing votes by influencing what the search results were and what the search suggestions were. And he had all the data. He says what was really fascinating is that when the Georgia election happened, he said in that month of the Georgia, I think it was in that month of the Georgia election, that all of the bias shut off. That once his research was made known, that Google flipped some switch somewhere and all of the search results came back non-biased. Like you might get from a Bing or somebody like that, or a DuckDuckGo, something like that. He says that they have not documented bias in things like Bing, but they've definitely documented it in Google. Okay, so there you go. What are we supposed to do about this? I don't know that there's anything we can do about this. I mean, we can try to get the government involved, but getting one corrupt structure involved in another corrupt structure, you know, who knows? Is that good? Is it bad? Who knows? All this illustrates for me is the fact that if you do not recognize how easy it is for humans to slide into treating others as automatons, as less than human, as not deserving of making the decisions that you have made because you are a superior human. I mean, if you don't have mechanisms in place to curtail that stuff, it's always going to happen. People are always going to turn into Pharisees. They're always going to go us versus them, and then it'll be us ridiculing them, and then it'll be us condemning them, and then it'll be us torturing them, and then it will be us killing them. It only goes one direction. And unfortunately, that's human nature, because we have a flesh, we have a fallen nature within us. And if we don't recognize it, it will go no place good. This is Phil Ferrand. and I have made it home.